numbered.
Rabbi Menachem Lichtag, Part 2, December 4th, 2016, The Jewish Calendar, The Name of God, and the Bible's Magic Numbers.
Okay, Tov. Those who weren't in this year, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, you'll still be able to follow. But because of that, I need to do a little bit of review. But one word of introduction. There'll be two parts to this year, the main part. Afterwards, I have a little tactical educational discussion whether what I'm teaching today should be taught. And if so, who, to who and to when. You'll see why. Because it's sort of a touchy issue, and it's a touchy issue if you do or if you don't. Now, just a word about the Jewish year. Whenever you pick a calendar, every society needs a calendar from time immemorial, because any society has business, and you need contracts, and you need lawyers. No Jewish lawyers, no. You can't support a yeshiva. And every calendar has to have a month, remember, a day, and a year. Weeks, we talked about last time, that's sort of an add-on. You can live without weeks. But weeks, you know, put a more religious element into the calendar. But you have to have a year and a day, especially when you do business transactions. Now, when you pick a year, probably the most important thing is it's got to be viral. Viral, you know what that means? Viral. V-I-R-A-L. You're too old. Only young kids understand what I'm talking about, no? It means it's got to be... It's got to be... Viral. There's another word for it.
Means
the more people that use it, the better. Because if not every family can keep their own calendar by years. I'll give you an example. There was a minhag a couple decades ago, after the Six-Day War, wedding invitation said, this many years to Shichur Yerushalayim. Didn't catch on. Maybe some people still do it, but very few. But the same amount of people who celebrate Yom Yerushalayim. Before then, there was to the founding of the State of Israel. It also didn't catch on too much. We like either to the birth of their God, their Lord, no, that's 2016, whatever it is, or the creation, which is called the Briyat Olam, which we'll talk about soon. So, but number one, you need a year that everyone's using. Number two, it would be nice if the year had meaning. And that's why picking to the Six-Day War, returning to Yerushalayim, was meaningful. So the State of Israel was meaningful. The reason it didn't catch on, why didn't it catch on? Because it didn't go viral, that's all. Because then when you write a check, you want to make sure the bank accepts it. And you have to use it now. That's if you're writing it or receiving. Now, what I want to talk about today is what's called the Jewish year. I'm sure you've been to a wedding, and at the wedding, there's always, we need more than seven kibbutim. So one of the kibbutim is you get to read the ksuba out loud. And what's the first line of the ksuba always say? We have the date, the year, and what year do we say? The Minyan Shanu Monim. I mean, we say the date to Briyat Olam, and it's a document, it's got to be true. And we have a little clause that the lawyers put in, the Minyan Shanu Monim, which means we're not saying, let's say someone proves that creation happened 5 years earlier, 5 years later, that doesn't mean the ksuba is possible, and we have no problem getting a get. That might be a good solution for the whole Alguna problem. But no one thought of that one yet. But it's meaning based on what everyone is holding. Now, what I want to discuss today is when the custom of counting the years to creation began, not from an historical point of view, from a midrashic point of view. Because if you follow Tanakh, there are no dates, there's no event in the entire Tanakh that's dated to creation. Not one, not even the flood. The first time you have a date in the Bible is the flood. And what are we counting the flood to? To the life of Noah. Afterwards, are there any other dates to Chumash? What? Where? In Chumash? Where? Where's there a date of a king? In Chumash, I don't think there is one. The only other date we have in Chumash is the most logical date. Put it this way. If you had to pick a Jewish date, if you had to pick a starting point for a Jewish year, what would be the most logical, meaningful place to start from? Either Matan Torah, if you're a Shiva Bachar, or if you're a Zionist, Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Now, what does Chumash go to? What does Chumash use? The first time of Sefer Bamidbar we talked about?
Yeah.
The year 40, Yitzhak Mitzrayim. All through in Chumash, the first year, the second year, I'm sorry, the second year of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, Sefer Dvarim, the 40th year of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The only year count we have in Chumash after the flood is to the Exodus, which makes a lot of sense. Not only the years, even the months go to the Exodus. How about the days? Well, the days go to the months. But the months go to the Exodus, don't they? And the years go to the Exodus. No. Is there any other, in Tanakh, is there any time there's a date to creation or not? We already said no. Are there any dates in Tanakh to Yitzhak Mitzrayim? There's one. If you have your Tanakh open, open up Melachim Aleph Perek Vav. Melachim Aleph, 1 Kings, Perek Vav, the first side of chapter 6. It's a key event in Jewish history. Someone, we read, if you were at Mincha yesterday, someone was dreaming about it. They never got it off the ground, but he made a promise to build one. What am I talking about? Building a house for God. It's a big theme in Chumash. It's finally built hundreds of years later. In fact, how many years from the Exodus does it take until they build the first temple? Read carefully, what does it say? It didn't say 480, it says 80 and 400, correct? 80 and 400? No. Pasuk Aleph, the very first one. It came to pass in year 80 and 400 from the time we left Egypt, they built a house for God. You can call it 480, but that's an amazing coincidence, isn't it? Because what's 480 a multiple of? 40. Melachim Aleph Perek Vav, the first line. It just so happens to be not just a multiple of 40, but 12 times 40. It could be just an amazing coincidence, or... Now, did 40 years ever come up anywhere else in Chumash? 40 years? All of them. In Kabbalat Shabbat we have it. Abraham Shanakub Vador, but that's because of Chumash. If you remember the flood, there's 40 days and 40 nights. In fact, and what name of God goes together with 40 days and 40 nights? Remember, last week we did the flood story. We talked about the two names of God. Of Chumash, there's creation in Perek Aleph, Yud Kei Vav Kei, Perek Bet Gimel. And then there's two reasons for the flood, two stories that flood together. It was the flood B'Shem Elokim comes from the Mei Tahom, from the Yamim, and the flood B'Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei comes, rain from heaven. And I try to show you that when I refer to God, the God of nature, the God who made nature and everything set by set of laws, it's usually going to be Elokim, and the God of history, and behind all the events of history, is going to be Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yitzhak Mitzrayim, history. Is there another multiple of 40 that relates to Yitzhak Mitzrayim? What? Where does it say that? When we leave Egypt, what's it say? And it came to pass in 30 and 400 years we left Egypt. That's in Parshat Bo. And if you want to look at Perek Yudbet, Perek Yudbet is going to be Lamed Gimel, Lamed Aleph, something like that. No, I'm sorry, Pasuk Mem. Mem or Mem Aleph. There's 30 and 400. But why are we making a big deal about 400? Because the Brit Ben Tarim, which God already forecasted going down to Egypt, or going down into someone else's land. And the whole story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the whole story of repression, God said they're 400 years. Again, it could be 400 years to the minute, or it could be 400 years, again, it's a concept that's 10 times 40. So that was the point in the title, calling magic numbers. It can't be by chance that the flood's 40 years, and then 40 years, 40 days and 40 nights. And then later, Matan Torah's 40 days and 40 nights, and three sets of 40 days and 40 nights, and then there's 40 years in the desert. And Moshe Rabbeinu is 3 times 40, 120 years. That's what I'm calling a magic number in Chumash. What the deeper meaning is, I'm not going into, but it's called a typological number. And therefore, if someone can prove to you historically it wasn't 480, or wasn't exactly 400, which all the Parshim talk about, don't worry about it. That doesn't mean that the number isn't meaningful. But using 480 is saying that God is behind historical events, using the number 40. And therefore, when they build the Beit HaMikdash, it's year 480. We're good? Now, that was just introduction. Now we can start this year. That was just the background. What I want to talk about now is the Jewish year. In all Tanakh, we never count to creation, but we do count to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The rest of Sefer Melachim, we count to the kings for a good reason. Because we have a kingdom, and everyone counted the kings. It wasn't only in Jewish history we count the kings. Every foreign power counted the kings. That was a classic way of counting years. It was very logical. That's why we find so many documents in almost every culture of a list of kings that people memorized by heart. Why did I need to know all the list of kings in order? Maybe you in school, you had to memorize all the presidents. But I don't need the presidents to know the year because it's every 4 years, it's a new election. But back then, if I have a document, I need to know the list of kings so I know what year it is. It gets a little complicated, but everyone had a list of kings. The Greeks came up with a great chop. What did the Greeks come and do? The Greeks were the first world conquerors who came up with a great idea. Forget this list of kings. And let's just start from scratch and just go consecutive. Adi Moto Mashiach. Until, let's always increment and forget this list of kings because the world got too big. And it's too complicated. And that began, anyone knows when that began? The Greek year? The Greek year began in our calendar in minus 312. You're aware of that or not? Throughout the entire civilized world, from the beginning of Hellenism, from the beginning of the Greek world, there was what's called the Greek year. The rabbis refer to it all the time. What's it called in rabbinic literature? Minyan Shtarot. Why did the rabbis adopt Minyan Shtarot? It was in the time of the Tanaim, in the time of the Talmud, in the time of Amoraim, in the time of Gonim, and even most times of some Rishonim. What year are the rabbis always using? And what year does the Talmud always use? In the Mishnah? Always Minyan Shtarot. All the Second Temple literature, Sefer Maccabim, for example, which is historical, uses Minyan Shtarot. And tell me, why did everyone use Minyan Shtarot?
It went viral.
It went viral, or the Jewish, it was free. It doesn't cost anything to use, but you need a year that everyone's using. It's the convention. Now, is there any religious significance to using Minyan Shtarot? To using the Greek year? We're not counting to their god or anything. We're counting to what the Greeks are counting. And because everyone's using it, it's the most logical thing to use. Why don't we count to the Jewish king in the Second Temple period? There is none. When they started that revolt, remember they started minting coins to the revolt? Yeah, but those were the Zionists. Yeah.
Did you specify why the Greeks picked that year?
I picked that year. No, they didn't pick minus 312. They weren't prophets. They called it year one. What happened was like this. Everyone's heard of Alexander the Great? He was the great-grandson, of course, of Cyrus the Great. No, he wasn't, but this. The most popular name is the Greek. I was just taking that off the tape. Alexander the Great you've heard of.
Yes.
And he conquered pretty much the whole civilized world. And one of his big battles, the big battle that began his big conquest, was taking over Persia. And who remembers learning what great Persian king did Alexander the Great kill or defeat? No one learned? What was his name?
One of the
Dariuses. Yeah. One of the Dariuses. Everyone, I guess not everyone, but it's well known that Alexander the Great killed Darius, and that was the big event. He became king over, he took over Persia. Because before the Greeks, the big emperor was, the empire was, were the Persians. And there were wars between the Persians and the Greeks, I think the Peloponnesian Wars they're called, went on for hundreds of years. Now, the rabbis are using the Greek year. In all Talmudic literature, no one ever counts to creation. It's just unheard of. We don't find it. The first time we find it, in the time of the early Gonim, a little bit, we find on a couple of mosaic floors like in Susia, they have a date to creation. Later in the time of the Rishonim, it picks up a lot. But the main custom, the Jewish custom of counting to creation only began around the 11th century. Guess where? In what area are we going to start counting to creation? When we're in Babylonia and under Islamic rule, we follow the Greek year because that's what everyone's following. When we move into Europe and we're under the rule of the church and under Christian influence, they stopped using the Greek year. So what do we use? Why can't we use the Christian year? At least not at a wedding. Maybe on business we did. But at a wedding on a ksuba or on a tombstone, I need a Jewish year. And that's when the custom of counting to Briat Olam began. By the end of the show, I'll try to explain why that began and what they used, how they calculated it. Now, what I want to do is try to share with you my understanding of how we got to our Jewish year. Just one last word of introduction to see how problematic it is. I'll just throw out a question. What year was the Second Temple destroyed? Just play password. 70, 78, 70 plus or 70 minus? 70 plus, okay? What year was the first Beit HaMikdash destroyed? What? 586. Isn't that like everyone's had that all the time? Now, quickly, how many years was the first temple? Bayit Rishon was how many years? 410. Bayit Sheni? 420. That's, it's sort of given. And I've seen timelines that have both. But don't you realize there's a tremendous discrepancy between them? Because if everyone says 586 was the first temple destroyed, which means the second one was built in 516, and it was destroyed in the year 70, or that means the second temple has to be about 580 years. And Chazal says it's 420. So we're missing 160 years. It's called the famous missing years. The goal this year is to understand how that happened. I want to share with you my understanding. I'm not sure if I'm right, but I want to share with you what I think happened. And I'm interested in feedback. I want to make it nice and simple. That's why I didn't give you any other sources yet. If you're living in the time of Chazal, in the time of the Tanaim, project yourself in the time of Tanaim. There is no Jewish king. We're under Greek rule. Everyone is using the Greek year. Of course we're using the Greek year. Wouldn't it be nice if the Greek year was also a Jewish year? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if everyone's using the Greek year, but the Greek year was actually also a Jewish year? That would be great. The problem is, it's not. Now, what year would we like to count to, if we could? We'd like to count to Tet Mitzrayim. Let's say I came up with a great chop, and I could turn the Greek year into a Jewish year, and have the Greek year be almost the same as the Exodus. Now, it can't be the same, because the Exodus of thousands was way back before then. But let's say it just turned out that the Exodus took place exactly 1,000 years before the Greek year. That would be awesome. Because then what could we do? We could take the Greek year and add what?
1,000.
Add 1,000, like 1K in the front, or like we do in Tafshin, in Hebrew. It's Hey Tafshin Ein, what is it? Ein Zayin.
Okay.
Just, we always drop the thousands, because no one lives that long. So we're always living within a millennium. That would be great, wouldn't it be? Now, can we do it? So let's get to work. Put yourself in the time of the Tanaim. It's around year, remember anyone know what year of Minyan the temple was destroyed? What Greek year was the temple destroyed? I thought everyone knew that. The Gemara assumes you know that. In 380. The year of the Korban, of the destruction of the second temple was 380 Greek year. I'm purposely not giving you tables because that's too complicated. Just take for granted that the temple was destroyed year 380 of the Greek year, which means the early Tanaim are living when? 250, 280, 300, around there, of the Greek year. For example, the story of Hanukkah coming up this month. Meaning, in Sefer Maccabim, the Gzerot are in 164, right? And the miracle happens in 167 in the Greek year. 145 and 148. No, I have it wrong. 145 and 148, which is minus 164 and 163. I'm confusing you. And there's 145 and 148. Again, I shouldn't have said that. You're confused again. Forget all that. The temple was destroyed in 380. Minyan Shtoreth. So you're living around the 300s. 200s, 300s. Tonight. I want to figure out how many years has it been since Yitzhak Mitzrayim. How do we do that? It's as simple as could be. Because how many years is it from Yitzhak Mitzrayim till Chorban Bayit Rishon? We said that pasuk.
480.
You don't even need a calculator. It's as easy as could be. From Yitzhak Mitzrayim until we get out of Egypt, it's 480. From till we build the first Beit HaMikdash, it's 480. How many years is it of the first temple till it's destroyed from the time we build it?
410.
How do we know 410? You do the math in Sefer Melachim. We have a continuous chronology, king by king. You add up all years of all the kings, you get to 428. But every last year of every new king is the first year of the previous king, and therefore I have to subtract every change of kings minus one. So there's 18 changes of kings, and therefore I subtract 428 minus 18 turnovers, and I get 410 years. Check it for homework one time. Therefore, what year was the second temple, was the first temple destroyed? Yitzhak Mitzrayim? 480 and 410, 870. Now I want you to open up a pasuk which you should know. Open up the book of Zechariah.
890.
What? 890. What did I say? 870? 890. Need coffee. Okay. 890. We're good? Everybody got 410, 410. Now, I want to figure out how many years it is till they build the second temple. So take a look in the book of Zechariah. And this is black and white. You can find Zechariah. Ketilim and work backwards. Find Sefer Zechariah, Perek Aleph. It's really and Pasuk Yud Bet. Zechariah's opening vision, and the opening line of Zechariah were in the second year of Dayavish. It says so in the beginning. In the second year of Dayavesh, in the 10th or 11th month, Chai has a vision. With horses, it's a beautiful vision, whatever it is. And in this vision, he sees a malach sent by God. And what does Chai say in Pasuk Yedvet? Or what's the malach say in Pasuk Yedvet? He prays to God and says what? Ad matai lo terachem al yudav yishraim asher za'amta ze shivim shana. Got that? Zechariah Perek Aleph Pasuk Yedvet. What do we see from here? And on that year, in the book of Haggai, go back a book, on the 25th of the 24th of Kislev, in the second year of Dayavesh, what did they do? They break ground on the second temple. Therefore, we know for sure, with Pasuk, from the time the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, in the 11th year of Tzidkiel, until we break ground on the second temple, it's exactly 70 years. How many years Tzitzet Mitzrayim was that? 960. Does that make sense? Haggai Pasuk Haggai Perek Bet Pasuk Pasuk Tedvav is the Yom Yisur Lechal Hashem. And Haggai Perek, the book of Haggai begins in the second year of Dayavesh and ends in the second year of Dayavesh. It begins on Rosh Chodesh Elul. The highlight is the 24th of Kislev. That's Perek Bet Pasuk Yud, and that's when they break ground. And Haggai gives three big nevuot on that day. Gives a fiery speech about return to sovereignty and return to prosperity. We've given that share before, I'm sure. That was the Hanukkah share. Therefore, we break ground on the second temple. It's explicit in the second year of Dayavesh. And it's 7 years after the first one was destroyed. I mean, the 7 years from destruction to rebuilding is not Yirmiyahu, that's Zechariah. Okay? That's not a prediction, it's a fact. Therefore, in what year did Yitzhak Mitzrayim was the second temple built? 960. That makes sense? Three easy dates, you can't argue with them. They're psukim. As solid as could be. Now, wouldn't it be nice if 40 years later, Minyan Shtarot began? That's what we need to do. Understand our goal? It would be great if 40 years after they break ground on the second temple, that Minyan Shtarot would begin. Is that possible? Well, anything's possible. Well, let's say that Dayavesh was king for 100 years, or 50 years. Would it be possible? No, because Dayavesh is gone already when they build the second, when Alexander the Great comes in. But can we fit in 40 years? Well, we have the second year of Dayavesh when we break ground. Now go to the book of Ezra for a minute, if you want to jump around. I'm going to give you this all on a source sheet in a minute, so don't worry about taking notes. If I give you a source sheet, you wouldn't be listening to me. Even now you're still. I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible. In the book of Ezra, Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel Yud Dalet, they finished building the second Beit HaMikdash. It's a little bit in Aramaic, but take a look in Yud Gimel Yud Dalet Tet Vav. You just tell me, on what day did they finish building the second temple? What day is it? Perek Vav in the book of Ezra, Pasuk Yud Gimel Yud Dalet Tet Vav. It's a little bit Aramaic. We mentioned Haggai. We mentioned a bunch of Persian kings. But what year is it? Does it say or not? Probably it's a Pasuk Tetvav. You give what starts. The Sheitz Abata Dana. Yeah. See that one? In the 6th year of Dayavesh. Got it? But Pasuk Tetvav? Yeah. Perek Vav, Pasuk Tetvav in Ezra. In the 6th year of Dayavesh, they finished building it, and now we switch to Hebrew. A couple of psukim later, and what do? They have Chanukah Tabayit. When? On Pesach time, because they finished in Adar. The 3rd of Adar, they finished the temple in the 6th year, and they have a Chanukah Tabayit. Therefore, we have the 6th year of Dayavesh. Now you have to open up to the book of Ezra. If you have it, if not, you'll just pay attention. The last event in Perek Vav, they break ground on the temple in the 6th year of Dayavesh. We never find out in Tanakh how many years Dayavesh is king for. We have no idea in Tanakh. The next event in the Bible is Perek Zayin. Look how Perek Zayin begins. Achar Dvarim Eileh. And who's the king now? Malchut Artaxasta. Now, skip to Pasuk Hey Vav Zayin. What year of Artaxasta is it? It's year 7 of Artaxasta. And guess who makes Aliyah in year 7 of Artaxasta? Ezra HaSofer. Okay? Now, in the book of Ezra, there's a gap between the 6th year of Dayavesh and the 7th year of Artaxasta. Agreed? Now, Who were the leaders of the Jewish people in the book of Haggai and Zechariah during the time period of Dariavash? From year 2 to year 6 of Dariavash? The famous leaders, who are they? The Navi, as Haggai and Zechariah. The political leaders are Zerubbabel, the political leader, Yeshua Kohen Gadol. We have Haftarot about them. There's Tzukim about them. And they're famous. We don't get along with the local population because we just got there. In fact, we're fighting with them all the time. In chapter 7 of the book of Ezra, when Ezra makes Aliyah, does he ever bump into Haggai and Zechariah or Zerubbabel or Yeshua? Never. Have you ever read what happens? Instead, he meets some of the grandchildren. And what does Ezra find when he gets there?
Intermarriage.
Third generation intermarriage. All over the place. Now, therefore, in Pshat, it seems like Ezra's coming, a generation or two later, at least. Got it? Now, what's the proof that Artaxasta is a different king than Dariavash? What's the simple proof? A different name. And usually different names are different people. Unless God gives that name, Yaakov Yisrael, you can say it's the same person. But usually two different kings. Now, if you look at the Persian lists of kings, which I'll give you soon, there's a king named Dariavash, and two generations later, there's a king named Artaxasta. And therefore, the account in Pach matches perfectly with outside history. And how many years is Artaxasta king for in Tanakh? We don't know for sure how many. But there's an event. Ezra makes Aliyah in year 7 of Artaxasta. Nehemiah makes Aliyah in year 20 of Artaxasta. And year 32 of Artaxasta, Nehemiah comes back again. And 2 years later is the last event. Therefore, the last event in the Bible is year 34 of Artaxasta. Got that? Soon I'll give you this on a page. I just want to keep it simple. Now, and there is no event, no dated event in Tanakh after the 34th year of Artaxasta. Now, what's missing? I don't know how many years there are between Dariavash and Artaxasta. I just know there's time between them. The rabbis do something awesome in Sefer Law. Because if I have too many years now, I'm past 1,000. But let's say Dariavash is Artaxasta. Let's say it's the same king. And let's say, even though there's two different names, it's really the same king. And they're all named Bush or something like that. They're all... In other words, we use... One might be his personal name, might be an official name. Remember when Chazal say, Hu Dariavash or Artaxasta? Or Koresh are saying, the names are interchangeable? Now, if I make this bold assumption that Dariavash is Artaxasta, got it? Then how many years passed from the 6th year of Dariavash to the 7th year of Artaxasta?
1 year.
1 year. If that's the case, what's the last event in the Bible? Year 34 of Dariavash Artaxasta, which is what year Tzitzit Mitzrayim? 994. Okay. Oh, now we're getting close. We're really close now. You follow? If I make that bold assumption that Dariavash is Artaxasta, there is no gap in the book of Ezra. And the Bible ends in year 994 Tzitzit Mitzrayim. What am I short? 6 years. Guess what the rabbis say? 6 years later is when Minyan Shorot began. 6 years later. And Alexander the Great came and killed Darius the year after Tanakh was over. Got that? Okay. And he was king in Elam for 6 years. And 6 years later, he becomes king over all of...
Say again, he killed what?
The rabbis say that Alexander the Great, everyone knows he killed Darius. No. Who's Darius? Darius Artaxasta. So they claim that the year after Tanakh is over, year 35 of Artaxasta, who's Dariavash? In Tanakh. Okay? He kills them, and that's when he becomes king in Elam, out there. And then he took over the whole empire 6 years later. And when did the Greek year begin? 6 years after Tanakh is over. And we have what's called bingo. Minyan Shorot is now the same as Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Agreed? Yeah. There's no source for that other than the Midrash. No. Does it fit into Pshat of the Pesukim? Of course not. But what do we gain by it? The Greek year is now a Jewish year. You with me? What? But plus 1,000. Now look at the page I gave you. I want to show you this in the Gemara, okay? I want to show you that the Gemara takes this for granted. The 6 year thing, the 6 year, what happens? Look on the top there, it's in Avodah Zarah, which is what we're doing today, anyhow. Okay. On the top, I took the last line from the previous page, Ahushtara, see where it says Bet, where it says A. Ahushtara, Dektibe, Shikshin, Yeterka. The case is like, anyone need a page? I copied it from a... Yep, that's the rough. There was a star, a document, that the year, instead of being... Someone wanted a document and collect this money. And the year said December 2021. So the judge says, come back in 6 years from now. 2022, I'm sorry. 2022? 6 years. The star said 2022. He says, no, really, it's 2016, but I'm using a different dating system. And I want my money now. In other words, we started counting, we hold Yashka was born in minus six and not whatever it is. In other words, I'm Greek Orthodox, we have a different custom. So is that there was a star that the date was 6 years too early. The star is late, and I have to wait another 6 years to collect the money. Even though it makes sense, it was written for them. So wait another 6 years, and he gives money 6 years later. No, the sofer wrote that star was right, but what? He was using a different counting system. What was he using? Why is the difference of 6 years? Those are the 6 years that Alexander the Great took over Elam. We don't follow that, but that sofer followed a different dating system. Understand? And therefore, when a star comes to Beitin, I have to consider what counting system he's using. Is he using the regular Greek year or the plus six Greek year? Okay. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, see it where it says Bina? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Sheish Shani Machu Be'Elam. The Greeks were 6 years they ruled in Elam. Elam is like near Iran area today. Afterwards, they took over the whole Middle East. Matkiv Ravacha Bar Yaakov, Mimayda Malkut Yavani Meninan. Dimmel Yisat Mitzrayim Meninan. Oh, how do you know we're counting to the Greek here? Maybe we're counting Yisat Mitzrayim. What's that imply? That the star could be Yisat Mitzrayim. If that's the case, then for sure there's no plus six. Then for sure it's a star Mulchar. Maybe the sofer wasn't using the Greek year, he was using the Jewish year. But he just left out the 1,000. You understand what the Gemara assumes? That when people wrote a star, Jewish star wrote, we're actually going to see 70 Tzorim. And I just dumped 1,000. Got it? Maidim Machlivani Medimad Lissat Mitzraminin. Vashaki La'afa Kama, Vinakti La'afa Batra. Got it? Vay Mulcharu. And this is a Jewish year, and we're counting Tzemit Tzrayim, and then for sure it's 6 years late, or 6 years early. Got that? Because Minyan Yevanim for sure is the same as Tzemit Tzrayim, minus 1,000. You see the Gemara is aware of the 1,000-year difference between Minyan Shtort and Tzemit Tzrayim? That's all I wanted to show you from here. Omer Rav Nachman, Begola Ein Monim Ela Lamache Yevanim Bevad. V'usaber Duchoy Dekamat Chilei, V'naf Gedak, V'ashkak Detanya Begola Ein Monim Ela Lamache Yevanim Bevad. What's the conclusion of the Gemara? In Jewish custom, we only count to the Greek year. And not the Greek year plus six, not the one in Elam. And therefore, in all shtarot, what's called Bidyan shtarot, if we have a star, the date, we have to assume it's the Greek year, or 1,000 plus the Jewish year. Look at the very bottom. The very bottom says, E. V'isagadayte flitzat mitzvah meninen, minisan meninen, elalav shmamina, lamach yevani meninen shmamina. We bring a complicated proof that all Jewish shtarot, during the time of Tanaim and Amoraim, are counting to the Greek year.
Yes. Does the Yerushalmi have any different perspective?
It can't be, because all the shtarot, the date is viral. Everyone uses the same date. It doesn't make sense that some communities are using a different Greek date or a different dating system. It makes sense that the Greek year could also be the Jewish year, and I've dumped 1,000, because no one's going to say, wait 1,000 years for your star. That's not in the realm of possible. Like we do, we dump the thousands. No, we're 5,000. We 5770 in Hebrew. It's Tafshin Ein Zayin. We dumped the thousands.
What month does the Greek year begin?
What month? I forgot what month it is, but it's minus 312 BCE, minus 312. When did they increment the year in the spring or the fall? That's the sugi over there. It's a machloket, and it's machloket among the historians also. Now, when did the Greek year begin? If I go to academic sources, the Greek year did not begin with Alexander the Great. Because Alexander the Great, who remembers from history? What year was Alexander the Great? 332, 333. And he was around for 12 years, and he died in minus 320. After he died, there's a war of succession. A big war. And who's going to take over the Greek Empire? And 8 years later, there's a big battle called the Battle of Gaza. things haven't changed much. War's in Gaza. There's a battle in Gaza. And after that war, they realize no more war, no more bloodshed. We want to organize this Greek empire. And it's so big anyhow. Let's divide it logically into three sections. The Egypt area goes to Tamai. The Syria area goes to Seleucus, Seleucids. And Greece goes to a guy named Demetrius. Got it? Which is Shem Chaminyachet, pretty much, isn't it? Africa, Asia, and Europe. That's the divide? Which is Parshat Noah, pretty much. You follow the divide? And then they decide we're all going to share the same culture. It's called Hellenistic culture. But we're not going to start, everyone's going to make their own calendar because we're going to have trade between us. We want to get along. Therefore, they decided, let's start counting after this agreement. This is year one. And we don't need lists of kings anymore. And from now, from that year, from minus 312, the entire Hellenistic civilization is using the Greek year. The Romans take it. The Byzantines take it from the Romans. And the early Islam takes it. And that becomes international of the year for almost over 1,000 years. It's called the Greek year. Understand? And the rabbis relate to it. It's called Minyan Sorot. And therefore we use it, A, because it's free, and primarily because everyone else is using it. And there is no Jewish year.
Could you review again how C12 became the beginning if that's not when Alexander died?
That's what happened. That was what happened historically in all the historical sources. It talks about, we have the history, the Greeks write their history. Recorded history starts from Alexander the Great. They have every year covered, every event covered. And he takes over in what we call minus 332. It's a big victory in Islam. 12 years later, he dies, minus 320. There's war of succession between all the different generals and people. And then in the Battle of Gaza, after the Battle of Gaza, they decide to split the Greek Empire into three parts. Where's Palestine? Where's Israel? Smack in the middle between Tamai and Seleucus. So we start under the Egyptians, Tamai. And then the first Seleucid Syrian Greek king to take over is Antiochus III. And then Antiochus IV is already the bad guy, and that's the whole story of Hanukkah. That's later on. Okay? Now, is that clear, what I'm trying to get at? That's how the... I want to say what happened. What I'm saying is simple. In the time of the Tanaim, because everyone's using the Greek year, the rabbis want to turn the Greek year into a Jewish year. Are they claiming to be historically correct? I don't think so. But I think it's a wonderful idea, isn't it? And it's worth a midrash or two. The question is, when did that midrash become Jewish history? That's the problem. I'll go over the midrash in a minute. But at the time of the time, my suggestion is, at the time I understood exactly what was happening, I'll give you a proof. There's a great Jewish historian who was a kohen in the temple, also a great general, and knew how to do a lottery and stay alive. Remember Josephus? You know the story of Josephus, don't you? He knows his history. And he's living in what time period? Middle Tanaim, isn't he? Same as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's the time of the Korban and the Great Revolt. So the history that he knows is the history that the rabbis know. Agreed? The history of Seder Olam, he's living in the same time period as the Tanaim of Seder Olam, of this history. And when he goes over the history of the Jews, the Persian time period, there's at least 8-9 different Persian kings. And he doesn't do what Seder Olam does. Which I'm assuming the rabbis of that time period knew as much as Josephus knew. Which means when they did that midrash, that Taryabes is Artaxasta, they knew it wasn't literal. But it's a beautiful midrash. But it's worth it to turn the Jewish date, to turn the Greek date into a Jewish date. That's my suggestion. Now, there's no doubt that later on, hundreds of years later, everyone took it literally. By the time you get to Amoraim, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara takes Seder Olam, that the four, these years of the Second Temple period, they take it literally. Sometime, and I think there's a good reason why they took it literally, and I'll discuss that at the end of this year. Now, how did the Greek year turn into the Jewish year? The Jews are counting to Yitzhak Mitzrayim, which is Minyan Sorot, past the Romans, past the Byzantines, in Babel, they're using that year. All of a sudden, the center of Judaism moves to Europe. And instead of being under Islamic rule, we're now under Christian rule. The Christians stopped using the Greek year around the 10th century, 7th, 8th, 9th century. They start the Minhag, and they start counting to their Lord, which is nice. It's a nice Minhag, remember, from their point of view. The Jews living in Europe can't use that anymore, can they? Now they need a new Jewish year. Can they use Minyan Sorot? They've been using it all along, but no one else is using it. Yeah. Can they go back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim?
Yeah.
It would make no sense. Because if they went to Yitzhak Mitzrayim, nothing changed. Because Yitzhak Mitzrayim is a Greek year. Now, their adversaries are counting to their Lord. So what do we want to do? We want to count to our Lord. Now, how do we count to our Lord? So I can't count to Yitzhak Mitzrayim because we didn't change a thing. So let's count to creation. Now, how do I count to creation now? No one's been keeping track. Well, I can open up Chumash and do a quick cheshbon. How many years was it from creation until Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Everyone knows that one? That's 2448. I'm sure you all remember. Because there's Avraham Avinu was born in 1948. Everyone knows that, I hope?
Yes.
I call it Yashka Minat Harminayim. Is that right before? That Avraham Avinu was born in 1948. Avraham was 100 when Yitzhak was born. 2048. If Brit Ben Avtayim is 400 years from the birth of Yitzhak, which is the minimum. So we leave Egypt 2448. So how do I get to Jewish year? I take Minyan Shtarot, add 1,000 Yitzhak Mitzrayim, add 2448, and I get to Jewish year. Simple as could be. So the Jews didn't change a thing. What did they do? They took Minyan Shtarot, that they've been counting anyhow, and they added 3448. And instead of saying Minyan Shtarot, or Yitzhak Mitzrayim, they said the Briat Olam. And that became the Jewish custom. So we didn't have a team of historians to figure out when creation was and how many years passed by. The Jewish year is basically still the Greek year. That's my key point. The year that we're counting is basically the Greek year that the Talmud was using, which is called Minyan Shtarot. How do we turn into a Jewish year to Briat Olam? We added 1,000 and then 2448. And if you do the cheshbon on your own, that's on the page there. You get, no, it's not on this page. We'll get in the page in a minute. They take minus 312. Want to do it real quick? If you have a calculator. What year is it Minyan Shtarot? What Greek year is it this year? How do I take 2016 and get to the Greek year? At 312. So what's 2016 and 312?
2348.
What?
2348.
Okay, someone's got a calculator? Okay, add 1,000.
2328.
Take 2016 and add 312.
2328.
Okay. Add 1,000. It's at Mitzrayim. Add 2448.
576.
That's how it is. In other words, the Jewish year is built on the assumption that the Second Temple is 420 years. Got that? You follow? Most of you don't realize that. But when we say it's 5770, we're basically saying Beit Sheni was 420, or we're saying Koresh is Ayavesh. Do you follow? But everyone accepts it, because that's been our custom. Now, once it becomes on every star, every ksuba has it, it's the Jewish year. So it's got to be true. And therefore, all the midrashim that we use to support all the acrobatic crunching of the years that the rabbis did to make Ayavesh Artashasta and make the Jewish year 1,000, de facto become Jewish history. And that'll be the second part of the show. You follow? Even though when those midrashim were first written, they weren't written as historical midrashim. They were written as part of the game to turn the Jewish year, the Greek year, into a Jewish year. Got it? That's my claim. I think it's as simple as could be, and explains why I think why it got so complicated. Okay, now give out the second page, Paul. Give out that second page. Which, yeah. Yeah? Yeah. You're talking about the Birkat HaChama? No, but it's the Molad is simple. The Molad is astronomy. It's not based on all the Midrashim. It's astronomical. The Molad is when the sun, when the moon crosses the sun. The fixed calendar.
29 days, 12 hours.
Yeah. The fixed calendar is the Council of Nicaea, which is Rabba and Rabba. No, our calendar. Our calendar, which assumes a 365-month, 19-year cycle, right, is based on the same thing that everyone else was using of the Council of Nicaea.
If I want to know the Molad next month,
yeah?
I have to figure out how many months have elapsed from the first Molad.
You're working backwards. Once we set the calendar, we did the Molad working backwards. Once you assume Minyan Shtarot, all those cheshbonot of when creation happened, we're working backwards from Minyan Shtarot. What? No, you're proving 1 equals 1. so that Binyan Shemot says it's 400 years.
From Israel's rise?
From the birth of Yitzchak to we leave Egypt is 400 years, which is minimum. If it was 430, what do you call it? Therefore, Minyan Seder Olam says the B'rit Penim to happen before Avram made Aliyah. Avram was 70 B'rit Penim Tharim, according to Seder Olam. You're aware of that? The Ramban talks about that. Seder Olam holds that 400 years is from the birth of Yitzchak. And we leave Egypt after 430 years. So it's 430 years since B'rit Penim Tharim. And 40 years from the birth of Therefore, Avram received B'rit Penim Tharim when he was 70, 5 years before he made Aliyah. Aren't you aware of that?
Which also goes to show how twisted things get.
What?
Also goes to show how twisted.
How twisted it has to get, because once I anchor, once I accept Darya Vishal Takshasta as the year, I got to work backwards, I gotta do somersaults.
Part about claiming it twice.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
The 6 years, is that a rounding or is just a way to fill the gap?
I fill the gap, yeah. There's nothing historical in those 6 years.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Historically it's 12 years. But I need to fill, it's not by chance it was 6 years, we need 6 years
before they needed 1,000.
Yeah, yeah. Because Seder Olam has to be Mesudar, that's all. I don't think when they wrote it, they were intending to be this is an historical document. It's just work nice, yeah.
I get why they were in Europe using Yitzchak Shrine's without changing anything. But what's the advantage of switching to Riyad Olam? Why is that better off?
Number one, I call it Takasha Namaisa, know what that means? That's what they did. You had a better idea? Write them a letter.
The default was just to maintain the status quo.
I think it makes a lot of sense what they did. You're persecuted. You're living under the Christian church. I won't say picked and oppressed people feels that they don't have equal rights and things like that. And they want some recognition. We're different. We have our own system. And therefore, what do? They're counting to their Lord, we're counting to our Lord. So we're going to do something symbolic. Our year is better. So let's count to Briyat Olam. It's a nice idea.
You mean they want to do some change?
Now, they could have done Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but you didn't do anything if you did Yitzhak Mitzrayim because it's the same year. You understand? Counting Yitzhak Mitzrayim after Minyan Shavuot is over didn't change a thing. So no one would notice the difference because you always drop the thousands. So I need to do something significantly different. Therefore, I had 2448 and to the year of creation. It's a lot, I can't prove they had to do it, but it's logical. Once the fact he did it made sense. It was a logical decision. I think meaningful.
And this information went around to the entire Jewish world?
It went viral. Not the information, the custom.
Europe.
All you had to do is add 3448 to the year you've been counting. So either, those you don't mix up. So it's either Minyan Shtarot or 3448 to creation. And since no one else is using Minyan Shtarot, let's just use our years. Yeah.
What's going on in the non-Christian?
What?
What's going on in the Jewish world? It's not.
So Minyan Shor was still in Teman in Yemen 100 years ago. They were still using the Greek year. The Rambam has the Greek year.
And in Bava?
What? In Bava they had the Greek year. They didn't use the Christian. They had the Greek year for until the Rishonim. All the Gonim used the Greek year. Yeah.
So did Chazal perhaps have any idea of when they say not to? Figure out the final
days. Oh, does it have to do with what? So Rav Schwab has a cool article on this. Rav Schwab says the reason why they hid these years is so when Mashiach comes, yeah, and let's say, you know, all of a sudden there's all these historical events happening which are like, you know, it sounds like Mashiach's coming. Let's say the Jewish people return to their land and there's nuclear things and who knows, crazy things happen in elections and there's turmoil everywhere and everything's falling apart. Yeah. So, like, take the Jewish. If we add these 106 years, start date, what are we up to? Pretty close to your 6,000.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why they say they were hiding it so that we wouldn't be ready for Mashiach. I mean, sure, we would be. It wouldn't catch us by surprise or something like that. Like, yeah, that's an opinion. It could be. I'm not the first one to tell you there's this discrepancy between the Jewish year and the historical year. No. So let's. All that was clear with this so far? Maybe I should give you the sheet. Everyone have the second sheet now? Okay. The first thing I want to show you is what you find in every classic history book. Everyone have the sheet? There's plenty of them. Everyone got it? And source A, called the Jewish year and the Jewish month. The list of Persian kings you find everywhere. All through Persia. Now, it could be the line, the Persians, and it could be just by chance everyone's got the same list of kings itself. But all academic research has these kings. There's a king named Cyrus the Great. We have a cylinder. It's in the British Museum. And he reigned in what's called, if we go back, they identify as 538. Cambyses followed him until 522. Darius the Great was 522. Xerxes was 486. Artaxerxes 465. Got it? Then 332, Alexander the Great. Everything we talked about is in source A. Never heard of the Battle of Salamis? That's when Ahasuerus gives everything over to Haman. That's Xerxes' big defeat. Now, if you take the Greek names, and remember, the English is not the Greek name, and Hebrew is not the Greek name. If you've been to Israel, there's a street called Rehov Lincolnland. Who's it named after? Lincoln. But when you take Lincoln and turn it to Hebrew, it's Lincolnland. And therefore, the names in Hebrew and the names in English are not Greek. The Greek pronunciation of Xerxes is like Xerxes or something like that. So, in every language, adapts it to its syllables. Now, most likely, though, who is Cyrus? Koresh. It's a perfect match. We don't know who can be. There's no name Cambuzi in Tanakh or anywhere. It might be this Artaxerxes guy. Was not Artaxerxes, a different Artaxerxes, but too complicated. Darius is Dayavesh. That's an easy match. Xerxes is Ahasuerus because he dropped the Aleph and it's perfect. The Shashrash. It works out perfect. And adding an Aleph to being the words we do all the time. And Artaxerxes is Artaxerxes. And therefore, if I take... Wait, a question.
Five numbers at the left-hand margin is the year that Melech started?
The year he began his reign. 538. Every history book has these. 537, 538.
The year begins Malchus and B.C.
Yeah, in B.C. That you find everywhere. Assuming that academic research, which is... This is like a convention everywhere, is relatively accurate, and I match this up with Tanakh, does it match or not? What do I have in Tanakh? I have Koresh. And I know 18 years after Koresh, in the 18th year of Koresh, is the second year of Dayavesh. Because that's also a pasuk you can calculate. And that works out perfect. The Darius is 20 years after Koresh. And that's when we built the temple. Now, we go from year 2 of Koresh to Dayavesh to year 6 of Dayavesh, which is when they build the Mikdash. And then two generations later, who comes? Ezra, during the reign of Artaxerxes. Does that match outside history? Perfect. There's three generations for intermarriage. That's why Ezra doesn't meet anybody from Haggai. Doesn't meet Haggai and Zechariah. He meets the grandchildren of Yeshua, Kohen Gadol, and things like that. In other words, outside history in Tanakh is a perfect match. To the T. And that only supports that what the rabbis are saying, he's Koresh who's Dayavesh, is something midrashic, and not something historical. Okay. Now, what's what happens to Jewish history? Look in source B. This is the calculation of the Seder Olam you find everywhere. From creation until the birth of Avraham Avinu, 1948, that's a calculation based on the Toledot in chapter 5 and 11. From the birth of Yitzchak, Avram is 100 years later, as brief end of Tim's 400, see 2448, first temple 480, I put all the sources for you, 410, 70, 34 years later, if Darius defeats Darius, that's the thing. We'll see the Psukim and Daniel later on. Alexander dies 6 years later, Minasero begins, and second temple is destroyed in 380. And everywhere you go, every art scroll history book, some of the Tanakhim have the dates on the side, I think the one you have. Does it have dates on in your Tanakhim? They put the dates there or not? Yeah, which is a disaster. Because it's supposed to be that's a commentary. But putting it in the Tanakh, because students think, oh, that's real history or something. You'll see, look at the last year of Tanakh, you'll see it fits perfect. In other words, everything, Minyan Sherot we did, is the accepted Jewish year. No. Once you make this bold assumption that that Dayavesh is Artaxerxes, right? And therefore Artaxerxes is the last Persian king, got it? Now we got a mess. Why? Where did I put Ahasuerus? Where does Ahasuerus really belong? Look at the list. When does the story of Megillat Esther really take place? According to real history. After the temple is built, before Ezra makes Aliyah. In other words, that was a Hanukkah, that was the Purim share we've done before. That to understand Megillat Esther, you have to realize, because Megillat Esther was written before they did this, Midrash game. And Megillat Esther is written after the second year of Dayavesh, after the reign of Dayavesh, after the Jews have an opportunity to return to Yerushalayim, and after they built the Beit HaMikdash. If you read Haggai and Zechariah, God's begging them to return. Read Deuteronomy Isaiah, Bifal. Prophecy is telling, come back, God's redeeming you, wake up. And Amisa doesn't answer. Like God called upon his wife to come back and show off her beauty, or God's beauty to all mankind, and we don't come. So That's why the source sheet was for a shir on Purim. When you read together that Esther with that in mind, then that's when it comes to satire and Marduk. But remember Mordechai and Marduk again, a whole different shir. But we've done that before, I'm sure. That's why the source sheet relates to that. Now, but once I hold that Dayavesh is our Tachshasta, I can't put Achashverosh in between them. Why? Because there's no in between them. I can't put Achashverosh after Tachshasta. Why? Because that's already Alexander the Great. I can't put him before Koresh because Koresh was the first Persian king. There's only one place to put Achashverosh. Where? Between Koresh and Dayavesh. Got it? The necessary conclusion that Chazal have to reach once we play this game and say that Dayavesh is Artaxasta and I crunch the Persian time period, then I'm forced to put Achashverosh between Koresh and Dayavesh. Can he fit? That's the problem. Well, there's only 14 years between them that it can fit in. Well, it just so happens, and how many years are there in Megillatis there? 13. And the next year they write the letter, remember? To keep Purim? So what does Seder Olam do? They put Achashverosh between Koresh and Dayavesh. And how many years was Achashverosh king for? 14. And the year of the Megillah is over. In fact, it works out so great. Why? What happens year Megillah is over, according to Seder Olam? That's Dayavesh becomes king. Who's Dayavesh? What did Dayavesh do? Allowed the Jews to build the temple. Why? Because Mordechai is running the show. And who's Dayavesh? The son of Esther. It makes so much sense now, doesn't it? It turns everything into a fairy tale. And it makes so much sense it became Jewish history. Because almost everyone in school learned, remember, Esther's son was Darius and allowed them to build the temple. And Mordechai's behind all things. And when Ezra makes Aliyah, Ezra's behind the with the list of building. Now, that's all a Midrashic result of that bold saying that Dayavesh is Artaxasta. Got it? To make the Jewish year. Because I'm saying that was the anchor that started everything. And then all the Midrashim that we're all so familiar with as a result of that. That was my point. To the point that it becomes regular Jewish history. Now I need a source in Tanakh to support it. So this is the coolest. Look on from Daniel. On the bottom, underneath the chart, on source, on the bottom of B, there's a pasuk in Daniel, Perek Yud Aleph. Daniel has really strange visions. I'm sure you've heard of them before. They're really complicated. But one of his visions is the following. And this is the anchor, the second anchor, that the Seder Olam uses to prove there's only three Persian kings. There was the text that says, it's Koresh, Achashverosh, Dayavesh, and Artaxasta. It's like this. It says, Bani b'shana achad l'dayavesh hamadi, amdil matlik l'mozbo. This is before Koresh. This is Darius the Mede, not Darius the Persian king, but Darius the Mede, who's very short reign, right before Koresh took over. Okay. After Darius the Mede, there'll be three Persian kings. And the fourth one, who's the third person, the fourth from Darius the Mede, he'll be very, very rich and wealthy. In the height of his wealth and greatness, the king of Greece is going to come and take over. So now this Greek king will be big and strong. The height of his reign, his kingdom will break down. And after this great Greek king, his empire divides into four parts, the king from the south will be the main one. Not the only one, but the main one. Now, pretend you're first year Hogwarts divination. Okay? And you were given this dream to interpret. What's it talking about? What's it sound like? Who's this great Greek king who took over and defeated the Persians? It's Alexander the Great. And then who's the Melech Negev who took over afterwards? That's Taman. Does it say that? No.
What do you do with Pasuk Dalet?
With Dalet?
It says after the
Greek king,
the empires in the middle of that reign.
It will break down. Yeah, that's Alexander the Great, and then breaks down 12 years later.
It's not in the middle of his reign.
What?
It's not in the middle, it's afterwards.
Uchomdon, I mean, the middle of his reign, he falls apart. Uchomdon, after 12 years.
Says to me,
yeah,
that in the middle of the strong reign of this fellow we're assuming is Alexander, the Malchus falls apart.
It breaks up into four parts.
Yeah.
So it breaks up to three parts. That's close enough. I'm not saying, for sure it's not referring to Alexander the Great. I said first year Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Okay? Because that's a simple explanation. Of course it's not that. It can't be that, because it doesn't fit. Remember, it's a dream. I don't think Daniel was a Nabi, was he? It's not in Nabim, it's in Ketuvim. It's a dream. There's a lot of strange dreams there. Now, but once I have this Pasuk, I can take Seder Olam and fit. Why? There's three more Persian kings. Who are the three Persian kings? Koresh, Achashverosh, and Dariyavish, and Artaxasta. Got it? Once I did the Drash, I can take this Pasuk and use it to support the Drash. I don't think it's shot in the Pasuk at all. Now, if I want to know who are the three kings, look on the top, you know what happens. Cyrus, Cambyses, Darius. Got it? And who defeats Darius? That's the Battle of Marathon. I'm sure you've heard of the Battle of Marathon. In 492, when the Greeks defeat the Persians. So his vision actually did come true. But it wasn't by Alexander the Great. Was it different? The Greeks defeat, the Persians try to take over the Greeks in the Battle of Marathon, and the Greeks win. And things sort of disintegrate until, for a while, and then Ahasuerus tries to build it up back up again. I mean, then, Ahasuerus tries to build it up afterwards. And that becomes the Battle of Salamis. So there is some historical truth to Daniel's vision. But it's not the way Seder Olam had it. No. Now, to flip the page over, that's the pasuk in Daniel that the Gemara quotes in Seder Olam uses. And therefore, the three Persian kings are Koresh, Achashverosh, and Dariyavish, and Artaxasta, and that's all Persian history. So we crunch 180 years of Persian history into 34 years. Okay, now, source D is not for now, that's for the Purim show, because we're running out of time. I have no idea what time it is. 10 to 10? We have another 10 minutes? Okay. Year one of Koresh is what he called. In the book of Ezra, what source D is about is what Seder Olam did to the gaps. Let me explain something. The reason why the Midrash can do all this is because the book of Ezra is lacking something. Our historical source in Tanakh for the Second Temple period, for the being Second Temple, is the book of Ezra. The book of Malachim is the First Temple period. Correct? And the author of Malachim, Yirmiyahu, goes out of his way to give you the ability to build a continuous chronology. Agreed? You can't miss that. In a similar manner, but exactly the opposite, the author of the book of Ezra is going out of his way not to give you a continuous chronology. That's what I want to share with you. When I read the book of Ezra, I don't know why yet. That's a fact. That's objective. When I read the book of Ezra does not give me a continuous chronology. What does it mention? It starts with the reign of Koresh, doesn't it? The first year of Koresh. The next event is the reign of Dariavish. It doesn't say how many years. It says they stopped the building in the fourth year, in the fourth parak of the book of Ezra, in Parak Dalet, Pasuk Dalet. It says they came in the time of Koresh. They broke ground on the. They tried to break ground. The local population starts to sit defada, and they stopped the building from the reign of Koresh until the second year of Dariavish. And in the second year of Dariavish, they start building. And you can do the calculation, there's 18 years in between. But the book of Ezra doesn't do that calculation. It just tells you they stopped the building from Koresh to Dariavish. It doesn't tell you what happened in between. The book of Ezra doesn't tell me how many years Koresh was king for. It doesn't say who was the king between Koresh and Dariavish. It just says that in the second year of Dariavish, they begin building the temple, and they finish in the sixth year. So that's the first gap in the book of Ezra between Koresh and Dariavish. We finish the sixth year of Dariavish, and we have a gap until the seventh year of Artaxasta. The book doesn't tell you what happened in between. And then there's a gap between the 7th year of Artaxasta and the 20th year when Nehemiah comes. And then 12 years later, Nehemiah comes again in year 32. And the book's over in year 34, 2 years later. But the book of Ezra doesn't tell me how many years Artaxasta reigned for, Dariavish, who were the kings in between. It's intentionally, I don't think by chance either, it's not giving you a continuous chronology. It doesn't. No. But if I want to make a count, if I want to make a timeline of the events, what do I need to do? I need to make some exegetic assumptions about what happened in between. So there's two ways I can do that. I can go to outside sources and see what outside sources do, which is easy. And when we do that, everything makes perfect sense because it matches outside sources perfectly. If I don't use outside sources and only try to prove it from within Tanakh, got it? I assume, what do you call it? Minimum, I take a minimalist shita. So what do I do? The first gap, that's source sheet. What did Chazal do? The first gap, who fills the gap between the first year of Koresh and the second year of Dariavish? That's Achashverosh of the Megillah. And it fits perfect. It crunches right in. Got it? Okay. What did I do with the second gap between the sixth year of Dariavish and Artaxasta? There is no gap. And what I do between the Tanakh is over and Alexander the Great? I put in 6 years. Got it? And then I continue my calendar. That's what Seder Olam did. You felt? It's so, but Seder Olam is so simple. That's what I'm trying to show you. I'm trying to stay away from all the calculations in like doing all these different year things. I just want to say straightforward the years that are the anchors of the whole thing. But I want to put myself where Chazal are in the time of the Tanaim, where the primary goal is to take the Greek year, which everyone's using, turn it to Jewish year. And it's doable if I crunch the years. Once I crunch the years and do it midrashically, then I have the midrashic fallout of that calculation. And I bring psukim from Daniel to support it and things like that. It's totally non-historical, but it works perfect. And it works so nice it becomes Jewish history. Yeah.
So I understand the 6 years.
Yeah.
And so theoretically, if it were 993, they would have added 7 years.
Of course, yeah.
So my question is, if it was 1,002,
yeah,
would they have subtracted 2 years?
What do you mean?
Make it 1,000.
They could have. Maybe, yeah. I mean, they sort of do that because according to Chazal, the Chorban was in 68, not in 70. There's a 2 year discrepancy.
Just randomly. I mean, if it was 1,003, would they have subtracted 3? I could ask it that way.
They could have. I mean, they'd have to come up with some way to support it, but.
But the 1,000 was.
They would probably say Shanim Kutot or something like that, or they would cut off. Avram was at maybe 1947.
I hear your thesis, I'm just testing it.
I mean, it could, but we don't know because that didn't happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Why did the author of Sefer Ezra?
Oh, okay, so that's objective. Now, why he didn't do it, I have my theory. I'm not sure if it's right, I'll tell you what I think. I think the book of Ezra, which is a continuation of the book of Divrei Hayamim, has a prophetic agenda, that's why it's in Tanakh. His agenda is to support the Jews in the beginning by Sheni, encouraging them to build the temple. Therefore, the history in Divrei Hayamim is all temple oriented. The story of David HaMelech in Divrei Hayamim is only about all the efforts David HaMelech does to take Yerushalayim and build the Mikdash. That's the only topics that are there. And if there's a war, it's about because they use the money from that war to build the temple. If I want to compare what is in Divrei Hayamim about David HaMelech compared to Sefer Shmuel and all the other sources, the only thing I have in Divrei Hayamim are all the efforts by David to build the Mikdash. Therefore, the first event, he's king over everybody. We don't have David and Goliath and all that. We're not whitewashing David in the book. That's not the topic. It's a story. That's not what it is. We're simply, the focus is the Mikdash. Because what's the last line of the book? Divrei Hayamim is written in the Second Temple period. The last line of the book is Hasarat Koresh. It's the first line of the book of Ezra. The last two lines of Divrei Hayamim is the first two lines of Ezra. It means it's the same book. It's the same authorship. It's time of Ezra Nehemiah. It's the time of Antiochus Agrippa. And they're encouraging the people to get to work on the temple. Therefore, the focus of Divrei Hayamim is all the efforts by Am Yisrael, by David, and then during Beit Rishon, the kings who did good things for the temple or bad things about the temple. Remember Uziel bringing Torah, it's only Divrei Hayamim. The top, I only have the kings of Yehuda in Divrei Hayamim for that reason. And then when I get to the book of Ezra, what events does Ezra talk about? Not all Jewish history, only the events that have to do with building up Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. Therefore, what's the first event? Hatzarat Koresh. The second they stop building, we jump till the same time when they start building again. Then at year 2 to year 6 when they finish building the Mikdash, nothing happens between the 6th year of Dayavesh and the 70th of Tashasta. How do you know nothing happens? Because when Ezra comes, it's told, it's Hefker built. Everyone's intermarried. Nothing happened. So what does Sefer Ezra have? Nothing. When does Ezra pick up? When we rebuild, when Ezra comes and starts to reform things in Yerushalayim and Nehemiah builds up the walls of Yerushalayim. The topic of Ezra is not Jewish history in the Second Temple period, but the history of Yerushalayim in the Second Temple period. And what does the book of Ezra skip? Ezra and Nehemiah skip? Any time period when the Jews did nothing? It's called Kamad Alei Sadami. It's not there. That's my notes. I think the book intentionally skips every event that had to do with when Am Yisrael did nothing and didn't care about Yerushalayim, the book leaves it up. It's like ignoring children is the best way to give them. Instead of yelling at a kid, it's much worse. If you want to get a message across, ignore him. That would hurt him a lot more than telling him how bad he is. If you tell him he's bad, you think he's good. Ignore him. Oh, maybe I did something wrong. Okay, that's just a theory of mine. It could be. But objectively, it doesn't have a continuous chronology. And that fits in the whole Megillah share, but that's a little too Zionistic for you guys, it's okay, but for in general, it's a little harsh. So look again, go back to source D. I talked about the two gaps, and then gap 3 is the Seder Olam. Then I talked about the Greek year that starts minus 312 and the Churban in year 380. Then I talked about the 11th century, European Jews not counting to creation by adding 2448 to 1,348, to the Greek year. And therefore it comes out to the, if I want to figure the Jewish year, I take the Goyish year, 2016, F-3448, F-312, and I get whatever year we're up to. And it's as simple as could be. And that became, for the last 1,000 years, it's been our custom. And because it's our custom, it becomes Jewish history. And therefore, all the Midrashic acrobats that are a result of turning the Jewish year into the Greek year, which is Koresh is Dariah, but Shifaldo and Nefra Hashverosh is between them, de facto become, as though it becomes history. I hope that's clear, what I tried to get across. That's my theory. Now I want to discuss the educational part, talking to it. Now, first, it could be I'm wrong. It's always a possibility. I just think, in my opinion, because I teach it, I think it's pretty compelling. I think it makes perfect sense. Now, should you teach something like this? Because what's the immediate conclusion? The rabbis are wrong. Like, when I teach this, I shouldn't teach it. For Shir Yeshiva guys, too many come up, what's their conclusion? Oh, the rabbis made a mistake, they don't know the history, therefore they're wrong about halach, and therefore I can pick and choose. And we get what's called modern orthodoxy. Okay. And it supports it. I was mean, but that's what my colleagues tell me, don't teach this to people, because it's dangerous.
Which colleagues?
What?
Which colleagues?
I won't mention any names. Not all of them, but okay. But still, they let me teach it. But you have to be careful. You have to teach it carefully. I only teach it to students I have I wouldn't teach it in most schools. I wouldn't teach it, yeah.
It seems like a poor trade to just make the Greek calendar coincide with the Hebrew calendar and completely misunderstand what's going on at the time.
It depends how you view history. We have a very modern view of history, an accurate view of history. We take history, but I mean, our view of history is very realistic, and we want to know the years. The question is the view of history in the time of the Tanaim the same type of history that we have?
I mean, you misunderstand the whole Megillah, the whole history.
Oh, that might be intention. That's something else. That's the Megillah share. I think that's part of the Megillah satire. You're hiding something on purpose, and I think someone called the book Esther or something like that. Something's hidden there. Certain things, they're more meaningful when you have to look to find it. Well, that's the whole world of satire, that if I want to give a message over, instead of being explicit, I just allude to it. So you have to discover it. When you discover it, oh, that hits you like a bomb. But it's much more meaningful when you have to discover it. That's an approach. Now, from an educational point, I'll tell you the dilemma. With kids going, like nowadays, kids who go to college and who have access to internet and historical sources. If you insist, as a fundamental belief of Judaism, I have to accept everything the Gemara says is true. And if Seder Olam says this is Jewish history, you have to believe that's Jewish history. And if you don't believe that Bayit Sheni was 420, the Gemara says, Rosh Hashanah, right in the beginning, Bayit Sheni is 420, it's like a given. That the Amorim accept this as history, for sure. And the Rishonim, and even worse, I think of the problem, the Masorah of Torah Shabbat Peh, from Moshe Gibbon, Torah Sinai, Masad, Yeshua, and all that. So Yeshua, Atzik Tzak Golam, to Shimon HaTzadik, it sounds like one generation. According to this, it's 8 generations. So you can say, I'm checking the Sagdolo, it's 8 generations. You can get around it. But in the classic, like the way the Rambam has it, it's just one generation. On passing over the Masorah. So you're treading on thin water. You follow? Therefore, it's very thin water. No, you're saying that. Now. Yeah. And therefore, from an educational point of view, if someone's not ready to hear this, right, it's very easy to reach the wrong conclusion. And then, and from an educational point, you lose more than you gain. And therefore, it's like flowers for Algernon. You know what that is? Flowers for Algernon? Yeah. Leave them uneducated. Leave them. No, don't teach this to people because it'll steer them away. It's a serious educational dilemma, for sure. But there's a flip side as well. Because if you hide this from students, some of them are going to find out about it. They're going to see. They're going to do a calculation about they're going to learn in history class, and they're going to study archaeology and world history, and they're going to see this whole list of Persian kings, and they're going to see that the rabbinic years don't match up with the secular years. They're going to study it, and it's going to be obvious to them the secular calendar is much more accurately correct. And then they're like, somebody's been hiding things from me, maybe they're hiding more things from me. You're stuck in between, you follow? You have a very difficult dilemma what to teach people, because you can lose students by not teaching this to him, you can lose this by teaching it to him. So usually Shabbat Tasa Adif, could be. But I'm trying to share with you an educational dilemma that I don't know how to solve. Yeah?
But from the dilemma perspective, if you really have some clarity about why or what motivated the Jewish calendar to synchronize with the Jewish calendar, then that's the lesson.
That's exactly the point of my share. I'm trying to give a logical reason how it came about. I'm not saying the rabbis made a mistake. I said the rabbis did something tremendous. I think it's beautiful what the rabbis did. It's just the rabbinical understanding of history is very different than our understanding of history. The way they view history is very different. The ancient world viewed history very different than we do. Things are very typological. That's why you'll find out the 480 years doesn't match up archaeology from Yitzhak Mitzrayim till to Bina Bat Rishon. Because everyone puts the Exodus like 12, 1300s BC and the Bat Rishon 1000. And there's, the 480 would put Yitzhak Mitzrayim in the 15th century. All the archaeology has Yeshua in the 12th, 13th century. And that's pretty solid. You know, when you, if you want to take archaeology as a, to support our Bible. But if you take 480 is typological, which makes a lot of sense, 12 times 40, it makes sense. Look at 40 years, I mentioned Sefer Shoftim. Those never, it's not by chance they have 40, 80, 40, 40. The Shoftim, the good Shoftim. The book is up to something. Yeah, question?
Yeah, no, that's just what I just think is so ironic about the whole thing. Is that what creates a potential problem in teaching this is the fact that people have a modern, almost non-Jewish view of history.
Uh-huh.
Right? That if people really understood history the way Chazal understood history, it wouldn't be any problem to teach this.
Yeah.
Right? That it was really about ideas and themes and messages and not about facts.
It depends what emes means. You have the same problem when you teach it. If you bring up the possibility that maybe the Torah is telling the flood story or creation story for to understand our connection to God, which God gave us this flood story, but maybe it's not historical. That's a possibility. Some people say, teach that. I have friends, again, friends say that if you don't believe the flood happened exactly in Chumash says, you can't count a person for a minute. Can't believe it's supposed to lead us in the whole thing. And there's poskim all of that. The Torah is true. But then you have to say that creation also in 6 days. But then the question, do you start demanding students, when you teach fundamentalist Judaism, do you demand they believe creation happened in 6 days? Or the whole Slifkin controversy? Got it? So I think most people nowadays are willing to swallow creation being...
Depends where you ask.
Okay, but at least in our tzibur. Flood a little thing, but then you have the slippery slope. Maybe the Avot, you follow maybe Matan Torah, and then you get... then you have all the... It's a very slippery slope. It's not a slippery slope. It's an open pit, whatever it's called. It's a mess, yeah. And therefore, don't bring up the topic. Sometimes if you don't bring up the topic, you're hiding things from students. And there's too much information out there today what to do with it. So what I'm suggesting is I'm willing to accept the academic, history as at least a reasonable possibility. I'm trying to give an answer why Jewish history went the route it did for a very logical, meaningful reason, for Midrashic reason, and understand the way Midrash and how the rabbis write Midrash. I'll share with you something, which as long as I get in trouble, I'll get in trouble for this one also. It was this week's topic of what mitzvot the Avot kept. Remember? What mitzvot did our forefathers keep? So what the Gemara says? No, they kept everything. And they said, even Erev Tavshilin? What was the answer? Even Erev Tavshilin. Now, the question is, is the Gemara saying, of course not, or of course yes? So when they ask the question, even Erev Tavshilin, and say, even Erev Tavshilin, is that something where it's sarcastic? Not sarcastic. Sarcastic? Right? Are they telling you, of course, don't take it literally? Or are they saying, take it literally? It's a machoket, as among educators, how to teach. Do you demand, we had a whole discussion on, I forgot what list it was. We had a whole discussion on this, about teaching the whole sugi of what mitzvot the Avot kept. So don't feel bad. Rabban also argues with Rashi. I mean, everyone argues with Rashi that they kept everything. And when you read Rashi carefully, I don't think he means it either. He's something saying much deeper what Rashi's up to. But when you take it literally, then you're demanding that you have to believe that Avram Avinu kept Erev Tavshilin. And if you don't believe that, you're in Kofer Bikar, because Gemara is true, you follow? And that's our Masorah. And then you have an educational problem where some kids don't buy that. So then what do you do? So that's what we're talking about. That's why I want to share with you a tactical educational problem of what to teach, how to bring up children today. And it could be 100 years ago, I think 100 to 300 years ago. No reason to bring it up. I'm sure a couple of people put this together, but it's too complicated, isn't it? It's way too complicated. You can't teach this to the average student. So the result, the Midrashic result, is so beautiful. You follow with Esther, giving birth to Darius, and that's why they built the temple. It's such a nice, simple, beautiful history, and everything fits so nicely.
Elegant.
It's elegant, that's the word. Nice. And then it catches up, that becomes viral. And then once it's ingrained in our thing, it's the same way that everyone thinks that Avram broke the idols, remember? When you bring that up as a little kid, and then but Reclamish is not there, what do you do with that? So, again, that's an educational dilemma. How do you teach respect of Torah? Now, the question is, when you teach it this way, does this add respect or take away respect? It depends on what kind of kid. In my opinion, with this approach, it makes, it'll help people who are doubting Chazal respect them more. Some people say, no, it teaches disrespect of Chazal. Yeah.
Can you just spend a minute reconciling this 586 BC versus what we know? In other words, 586 BC, the construction of the first page of
And Seder Olam, it's in 400 something, yeah.
But based on our calendar, it's 70 AD was when the second one was.
Yeah.
There were only 70 years between the destruction of the first one.
So yeah.
That's
outside history has by Cheney not 420 but 580, 585. Follow? That's 160 missing years, 166 missing years, something like that. Yeah.
So what happened?
What?
How do you reconcile?
That was the purpose of the shir. They're not reconcilable. And, saying when we say by Cheney was 420, it's accepting Seder Olam. And this midrash game we played to turn the Jewish year, the Greek year, into a Jewish year, but it's not. It doesn't fit into pshat. In other words, if the 420 were psukim in Tanakh, I'd have a problem. But the psukim in Tanakh fit the outside history perfectly, way better than the midrashim. The midrashim don't fit Tanakh at all.
So the real answer is that lasted 585.
Yeah. Put it this way: we have in Sefer Yirmiyahu. The fourth year of Yehoiakim is the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. And we have Babylonian history pretty well documented. And from the Babylonians, we go to the Persians. That history is pretty well documented. We have his palaces. We have Babylonian history. We even have Assyrian history from before him. And then you can correlate between biblical history and outside history. And that's how you get to 586. Because we know when Sennacherib came in, like minus 720, around the 710, around there. And we know when the Babylonians took over the Middle East. And we know when that Babylonians fell to the Persians. We know when Koresh came. And if you match that with Tanakh, then the temple was destroyed in 586, or 585, 586. If you follow 420 for Beit Sheni, the temple was destroyed in 420 BC. It doesn't match anything. Yeah.
So according to this year, the real accurate year in Jewish years now is not 5777, but 5777 plus...
No, not at all. We don't know. We have no idea how many years it is because it's assuming Brit Ben Tov's Pshat of Chumash is not 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Do the math; it doesn't add up. In other words, to say it's only 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak to 600,000 people coming out of Egypt, even if everyone had 30 kids, it doesn't add up. The years don't add up, and the population doesn't add up. 400. It makes more sense. It's 400 years from the time Yaakov went down to Egypt till we leave Egypt, which is Pshat of Chumash.
But it's some number.
430.
It's
what?
Some number significantly above.
Remember, Moshav ben Yitzchak Be'eretz Mitzrayim? 430 years. That makes sense from the time Yaakov came down until we leave Egypt. And then it makes perfect sense. But then we're way past the year 6,000. Mashiach came and we missed him. What?
So it's some significant number above 5777.
What?
It's not 5777. It's some significant number.
It's some other number. It's, again, years is a convention. It doesn't make a difference.
I just had a question based on that. My question was, do you happen to have a view whether the Midrashim along the lines of there will be 6,000 years for the world and different sets of 2,000, do you happen to have a view whether that corresponds to the Midrashim year or the...
I mean, it's all that, about 2,000 years of Tov, 2,000 years of Shekhinah, 2,000 years of Galut. So, I mean, it matches our history beautifully. If you see some dying in the state of Israel and returning, things like that.
Meaning, if it's for the Midrashic year, not the Midrashic
year. Yeah, yeah. Even without the, if you add those 160, let's say, right, then we're very close to 6,000, maybe even past it. But no one's counting. No one's been keeping track since thing. The years in Chumash doesn't give you continuous chronology. It's all based on the anchor of Seder Olam is the 480, which I think is typological. The 480, because it's 12 times 40. That's why I use the number 40, it's a magic number. What I'm getting at is that the numbers, the years in Chumash, right, are not historical. Same thing, the ages and years, even the, remember all the genealogies as well. Remember, by chance, Hanukkah is 365. There's something when you do those years and compare them, it's awesome. When you study them carefully, what comes up is amazing stuff, but it's not just to give you history. There's something deeper there. It's about our relationship with God. So Chumash is using, that was the title, magic numbers, are there for prophetic reasons, not for historical reasons. And when you study Chumash, study the 40 and use that to understand what's the meaning of God's hand in history. How does God talk to you through historical events? think God of history. Think that the God of nature is the God of history. Remember Hashem Elohim? You know, it's living a life of serving God and seeing the hand of God both in historical events and also in nature. And that enhances your Avodat Hashem. That's a key purpose. It's not to tell you that Chumash wasn't written to teach you history. And if I find that there's a contradiction between what's accepted today as real history, as historical history, and biblical history, it's no big deal because Chumash wasn't written to teach you history. But that doesn't mean things didn't happen. It means it's not the purpose of the text. The text is there. There's a God. God gave us the Torah. And we learn the Torah to understand our relationship with God. But what happened in history? Whatever happened, happened. What's important to us is our service of God. And we're not coming to validate, you know, this opinion and that opinion. I'm trying to help you appreciate how it came about that our historical dates don't match up, you know, the Seder Olam dates don't match up with outside history, but I think a very logical and meaningful reason why it's different. Yeah. Anyone needs to, I know we're way over time. You can, no problem leaving. I'll answer questions. But let me just end, you follow? I'm not sure if I should put this on tape anywhere because I get in trouble. But it's a lost cause already. But again, I'm sharing with you I have an educational dilemma whether it's worth teaching. Because when it's not taught properly, it's misunderstood. It's very complicated to teach. And that's why I teach it 2 shiurim and it's complicated. But if you read the literature about all the different attempts to try to solve the problem, everyone's going like this and like this and like this. I try to give a straight shot, clear understanding of what happened historically. Instead of, you know, that the Persians were missing up the years, there's this new book came out that says the Persians, I mean Greeks purposely made up Persian history for some other reason. Everyone's covering up something. Everyone's doing something. And it comes out ridiculous. Because the academic years are based on astronomy and eclipses that are recorded and things like that. It's pretty compelling, the academic history. Yeah. Okay, you had the question? Yeah.
I'm not dealing with the knowledge itself.
Yeah.
The important thing then is for us as educators to be able to provide a framework for your kids to be able to check these files and then run it
and
make a strategy. Nobody seems to be doing that.
Yeah, that's my dilemma. Because I think this is an answer which is helpful for a lot of kids, but for other kids it's destructive. So I'm Amish. I have an educational tactical dilemma what to do with it. But it's worth for adult people like people here. I think it's worth sharing ideas because a lot of people are bothered by this. I think it helps understand, and it has an effect how you understand Chazal B'Klal. Take him literally, not take him literally. Yeah. It's how you understand Chazal in general, how you read Talmud a lot of times. Yeah, which is a whole different approach.
Bernie. Mm-hmm.